watching Doctor Who. I should be writing number 529, October 15th, 2020. It's still 2020. Some people are saying it's March 200 and something. Whatever. We're still here. Hey, Todd. Hey, Kay Kimmy. I am, if you're watching this, you can see I'm testing out new Stream Element stuff. They're looking okay. I'm pretty happy with it. Which is funny because I've hated doing the process. I'm very frustrated right now, which is why I'm trying to calm down and not have it affect the podcast. But two things I'm happy about is, one, you can actually see this whole Halloween setup. And the second thing is, you shouldn't be able to hear my computer anymore. I got a monitor and a keyboard set up, and my actual machine is underneath the desk, so you shouldn't be able to hear anything. So this should help you guys watching now. Hey, Wordathon, good to see you. And it also should help making this for the podcast later. So that's all a happy thing. Phased out, I think you have a... I'm confused. Hey, Underpope. You can hear me, though. Do I count as a thing? No, I don't count as a thing. I'm a person. Rainjoy, good to see you. Cool and spooky. Yeah, I was happy. The place I found the overlays... Actually, this was their free Halloween overlay. So I got their free Halloween overlay and played with it. And then it made me buy their other overlay. So their little promotion thing worked. Not entirely happy with the chat on the screen, just the way it looks, because, believe it or not, it's very difficult to find out how to do that. Or at least, I'm looking in the wrong places, but I finally had a guy just tell me basically how to put it into a web page and put that browser on your screen. Which means you can't change how it looks, so that's why it looks like a big old white block of text. But that's okay, that means I don't have to look over here at my tablet to follow chat. Trying to look on the bright side. But writing! I got back on For the Words this morning, and they've got a new monster. I forgot about this, I actually think they had this last year. Like I said, I haven't played in a while, but this is the... sort of RPG writing site, and they have a new monster. The previous monsters were like, write 2,000 words in 2 hours and then you defeat this really high level monster. But now they have endurance battles, which include you have to keep writing, and if you stop writing, then your hit points start to go down. And I played with those monsters this morning, and I wrote 1,000 words in 25 minutes. I don't know if they weren't good. I was just kicking around an idea I had. But I was pretty impressed. The encouragement to write lest I lose hit points as we go is pretty good. So, yeah, I was thinking about doing a giveaway for some For the Words a subscription, but I gotta figure out how to do that. Because I still haven't shipped the books out from the last giveaway. Sorry about that, guys. They're right here. I was planning on going out this afternoon. Went out to send my daughter's birthday present and forgot the books for the giveaway at home. So, yeah, I'm a little scatterbrained. But, has anyone listening checked out the For the Words site? Have you played around with it a little bit? Does not have the best UI. But once you click around, it's pretty easy to use once you find the things you're looking for, if that makes any sense. Hey, Billy Boy. Interesting new look. That's, I'll take that as a compliment. Interesting is always a little suspect. Unless you're asking if something's boring. Yeah, I'm playing with the Halloween thing, and come next month, this will be my background. So, got that off of the, actually, Valerie from the Discord showed me where to find that. Every year, I go looking for the National Novel Writing Month, art of the year, and it's always so hard to find. Talk about bad user interface. I love National Novel Writing Month, don't get me wrong, but their flair is really hard to find. But in their defense, they now have Zoom slash Twitch chat backgrounds, which is really nice. The only problem is they're supposed to be a little person floating, like like a astronaut. Actually, nope, that's not it. Yeah, it's up there if you can see it. It's hidden by the chat, unfortunately. Oh, good. Thank you, Bill. It's interesting, means you like it. Went on there to look around a bit, but read the fact. Didn't do anything with it yet, though. If anyone's interested, I have in the show notes for the last episode, which I think will be on the site Friday the 16th. I have my referral code, and if you use that to sign up and buy some, it's one of those really irritating things where you can't buy subscription time. You have to buy their special currency and then use the currency to buy subscription time. I don't know why. It's possible there are other things you can buy with their currency. I haven't paid that close attention. I just use it to buy subscription time. But anyway, if you sign up and pay for a subscription, you will get extra and I will get some for using my referral code. I'll put that in the show notes today. It's in the show notes for Tuesdays. And if you're hearing this and you can't see the show notes for whatever reason, just email me and I'll give it to you. But wanted to say that the Endurance Monsters were surprisingly influential this morning, and I really appreciated that. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, it's so funny. I feel so embarrassed talking about this because I went on and on and on about backups just 2 days ago. Oh, thank you for the Prime subscription. Kate Emwa? I'm not sure. I apologize, but thank you for the subscription. And you've shown me that the alert tool that I have does not work. Still can't get that to work. At least it showed up in chat, and I can thank you that way. This little sad box below this box, that's supposed to pop up when someone follows or subscribes or something. But it just looks like a little box. So useful. So the embarrassing thing that happened to me this morning, without giving too much, I guess I can't give too much information. It's pronounced like seat. It's meant to be a pun on deceit for a character in my work in progress. Okay, cool. Thank you, Seat. So I'm trying to strip out the identifying information here. I was going to send a proposal to. Oh, hey, Rolling Nerdish. Good to see you. Was going to send a proposal to a publisher for a project, and then I worked it out. I sent it to a friend for comments. I had it all worked out. And then when it came time to submit, I noticed they said they wanted a number of proposals. So I just dashed one off so I could give them two. You can guess which one they went for. They went for the one that I put very little thought in, except it's based on something I wanted to write for a while. So it's like this story is lodged in my head. But I tweaked it to fit the project they wanted. Fast forward to now, they've accepted it and they want me to write it, and I can't find the one I just dashed off. I found the email I sent to my friend that said, "Hey, can you look over this proposal for me for the one that they didn't want?" I can't find the other one. And I'm really worried that I wrote it directly into a submission portal and now I can't see the submission. Which would have been so stupid to do, but I can see myself doing it. So, and this isn't a problem of backing up, because I realize my problem is I write in Scrivener, mostly. But sometimes I will, after I export to Word, I'll edit in Word. And sometimes I'll write something in an email that I don't put anywhere else. And sometimes I'll write it on For the Words and think, eh, that's not too good. I'm just glad I don't think there are any wasted words. I don't regret writing it, but I don't put it anywhere else. So, I was just very angry and frustrated with myself this morning that I'd actually sold something that I'd lost the proposal for. So I had to email an embarrassing email to the publishers and say, "Hey, can you give me a hand here?" and just send that back to me. But it made me think about how I've tried very hard to get better with versioning and get better with keeping track of stuff, and I'm still not good at it. I think this is what the whole mindful movement's about. I'm the person that will reach for any blank piece of paper to write down a note, an idea, a shopping list. When I was writing Book Burners, we would have our group meetings where we'd critique everybody's stuff, and I would grab whatever was available to write down the comments on my chapters. And then when it came to rewrite, sometimes I wouldn't know which book I'd put it in. And I think this is the whole, if you're mindful, you're less likely to do that. But that's a hard habit to break. It's going to be really tough for me. Because I started doing versioning with I would write the name of the project, and then I would do, instead of like version 1, 2, 3, or 4, or final, or whatever, there's a funny thing out there saying novel titles are like first draft, second draft, final draft 1, final draft 2, really the final draft, etc. So instead of that, I put the date in backwards because it'll be easier to sort that way. So I do novel title underscore. You know, if I wrote it today, it would be 20, 10, 15. So 201015. And so whenever I grabbed all of my documents, it'll sort by, and it'll show me the most recent at the bottom. Or at the top, depending on whether I ascend or descend. And that's pretty good. That's a pretty good way to find the most recent version of something. But when it comes to ideas and short stories and essays for Escape Pod or somebody else who wants an essay, they're all over the place. And that's very sloppy. And yeah, the problem is I'm not coming to you with any advice. I'm saying this is a problem I discovered that I still have today, and I'm unsure of how to deal with it. Because really, the answer is not use Scrivener. It's gonna take a shift in thinking. It's gonna forces me to be more aware of what's going on. I realize I didn't change back to the Halloween thing. Sorry about that. So yes, okay, Cunning. This was the scene I was actually going for. That's the National Novel Writing Month scene will be the scene for next month. Oh, hey, HRHS hockey. Yeah, it's I'm just kind of scatterbrained, and I think the hardest thing about the whole mindful movement is the times that you need it the most are when you're usually in a hurry or something, and you don't think you have the time to settle and think. I'm doing this thing right now, and I'm going to do it the best I can, essentially. But I am at a point in my career where I have half-finished ideas all over the place. And yeah, I'm not sure how to fix it. So first I have to hope that they'll get back to me with my proposal, and then try to sort things better, I guess. The thing is, I like my versioning method, I just don't use it all the time. What if I should start with the date? And then all my recent, everything recently that I've done will show up in, and I won't have to search for a name, because sometimes I forget what I name things. That's another problem. I'm very bad with naming things, and when I do name them, often the name just drops out of my head. So. Oh, wait, something did pop up. We did get a follow. I think that was a little ghost. That was exciting. Tiny, but why can't I? Okay, sorry. I'm very excited. It's trying to. Been wanting alerts for a very long time, and I think it's just rather stupid how difficult it's been for me. Like, is it me? Is it the stuff I'm using? I don't know. Okay, sorry about that. We have stuff in the chat. Well, the problem with having the chat on the screen is I can't scroll. So, thank you for the follow, Galax Alley. I just was excited that my alert thing was finally working on the chat. Oh, Seat says, I have tried to do NaNoWriMo a few times, but it always falls apart in the latter half for me. Yes, that is often my problem too. We talked about that a little bit on Tuesday about what can you do to fix that. And I think one of the things is try to have some big padded writing days at the beginning when you're all excited. Because, like, around day 9 or 10, I'm just like, oh, this isn't an exciting party. This is a long slog. Why did they lie to me that this was an exciting party? But, it's, another thing is don't see it as failure. Because if you write, if you do anything to write hardcore for NaNoWriMo, you're probably writing more words than you would have anyway. And so it's like the month you did not do NaNoWriMo, you wrote 3,000 words. The month you tried to do NaNoWriMo and quote unquote failed, you wrote 20,000 words. That's still amazing. That's still 20,000 words. So go for it. You'll probably get more than you would have had had you not gone for it. So that's my, dang it, Nightbot. Ooh, I got it. That's the next thing on the list. Figure out the bots. Damn bots. So, sorry. So anyway, I endorse it even if it just increases your word count beyond what it would have been anyway. But yeah, pad your days early. And also, the problem I have is that I end up, if I miss a day and I miss another day and I miss another day, that's 30, no, that's, I used to know all the math. Sorry. 4 days is 5,000 words. So you miss 4 days, that's 5,000 words. And then you have to look at the remainder of the month and think, how do I spread out those 5,000 words? And then every time you do that, your next daily word count goes up. And maybe that works for people. Maybe spreading it out does. But I have realized it does not work for me. That just makes me depressed to see that I have more and more and more and more to do. So I try not to think of it that darkly. If I miss a day, then I think I'm gonna have to have a couple of days to catch up. If I miss one day, I try really, really hard not to miss two. That's how I'm going to be approaching it this time. Getting behind and Thanksgiving shows up to put a wrench in. Yes, I have asked people for advice on how to deal with Thanksgiving. Most people say just pad the days before and after. Just don't even worry about it. So yeah, that's my thing is right now is versioning and NaNoWriMo prep. I'm also not sure what project I'm going to do, which is interesting. So I need to figure that out. So what's on people's minds right now? And this goes for people who are listening on the feed because I'm still welcoming any emails and stuff people have. If you've got a question for me, please ask mightymer@gmail.com. And I will get to it. But if you have any questions in chat, let me know. I'm going to be looking for, I think I have a couple of emails actually. I answered that one and did not get rid of it. Good job, Mer. Yeah, I don't think I have any actually. I'm just again, I'm messing things up in that I did not clean out my podcasty inbox once I answer the questions, but would love to hear what's on people's minds. If you're okay, here's something I've always wondered. If you're not doing NaNoWriMo, how do you deal with all the NaNoWriMo crap in November? Does it encourage you? Does it annoy you? Do you tune it out? Do you find yourself regretting you didn't do it and you're 20,000 words behind? So then you feel sad that you can't catch up. I mean, what if you're not doing it, how do you deal with all this NaNoWriMo energy everywhere? Because I've always wondered that. I always feel bad because, like, around this time, for the next for the 2 months out of the year is getting ready for NaNo and then doing NaNoWriMo. And I've always wondered about people who don't. I mean, I guess the first thing you can do is not watch this or listen to it. And the next thing, just see, tends to hide from it usually, which is probably the worst outlook to have. I don't know. I don't think hiding is a bad thing per se. It's just, I'm still glad you're here though. That's good. Sybil Rose, I was always able to tune the nano stuff pretty well when I wasn't doing it because I was dealing with Tech Week, show opening, show running, starting another production all in November, so I didn't have the time to spend on it. Really nerdish for me when I haven't done it. It's usually a mix of just tuning it out and feeling like I'm missing out. Yeah. Well, I apologize to those of you who are not planning on doing it. If you have something you want me to talk about in the next 6 weeks, let me know. I don't have to talk NaNoWriMo all the time. It's just what's on my mind and what I think is on a lot of people's minds. Galax Alley, the times I didn't do it were because I was already in the middle of something back when I thought that mattered. It sort of did matter if you followed the rules to the letter, and I know that that's like loosened lately. But I had that problem too of wanting to do it, but being in the middle of a project and so couldn't do it. But it's I'm a rules follower. You never want to say you're lawful good when you read the whole D&D thing, because lawful good's boring, but yeah, I'm lawful good. Very boring. Okay, Kimmy, I cheer others on and use the surrounding energy to push myself into action with whatever I was doing. Sometimes feel a bit guilty too. But you also said you're going to be doing crafty stuff, and I know a lot of people try to take the energy of NaNoWriMo and put it towards their own creative things. things, whether it's crafting or songwriting or poetry writing or comic writing or drawing or something. It's people, you know, take that, hey everybody, let's do a huge project in November and hold on to that. So yeah, the chat has moved faster. Oh no. Sorry, the chat has moved faster than I can keep up with on the screen, so now I have to look away from the camera again. Dang it. Billy says, basic literature question. It seems like there's sometimes a fine line between horror and fantasy. Bram Stoker's Dracula, for example. What do you think makes a borderline novel fall in one category or the other? I think it's fear. Possibly gore. I was talking to Diana Rowland, who is the author of the White Trash Zombie series, which is awesome, by the way. It's hysterical. If you like hysterical fantasy slash horror, then you need to read it. And she was laughing because somebody put it like on the list of 10 best horror YA, and the main character's in her early 20s. It's not YA. And she didn't see it as horror. The girl, the woman does turn into a zombie. And as she, the story goes that as long as you keep eating brains, you will look human. And it's only when you are without brains or when you get injured that your body starts to rot. And of course, that happens in every book. Something happens and she starts to rot. And there's not a lot of scary stuff in there. I mean, the main character is the zombie. And so when there are other zombies, it's not the same feeling. But since she is rotting and there's action and stuff falling off, it can get gross. So I can see how they'd think that was horror. But really, it's humorous fantasy with a little bit of gore. I think horror is, I don't know, the literature stuff you can read into with horror can be quite in depth. I think a lot of horror has to do with taking something in, with examining our regular world and putting a fantastical look on it. I'm not saying this well. The scariest thing about zombies is the fact that it's really hard to look at somebody with your spouse's face and know that they're gone and cut their head off. It's that the fear of zombies is not the brain eating, and it's not the shuffling and the masses. The thing is the familiarity. And so, like, White Trash Zombie takes that away because that's not really an issue. But taking something familiar and making it scary. Or as Whirling Nerdish says, I tend to agree with Chuck Wendig, horror is often a spice added to whatever. Tucker and Dale vs. Evil is one of my favorite horror comedies, but it's not scary. I watched Anna and the Apocalypse last Christmas, and it was a very interesting story. It's a Scottish Christmas movie about the zombie apocalypse, and it's a musical. And it's awesome, but it goes in places you don't expect a horror movie to go. Basically, if you get the list of people who are supposed to survive, it doesn't quite follow that list, and that's all I'll say. And then you realize that one of their early songs is how they're all singing about how there's no such thing as a Hollywood ending. Nothing is so neat as it is in movies. And I realized that was their, and that was their anticipation. Not anticipation. Foreshadowing. I know words. So that was the foreshadowing. And because they started taking away people you didn't expect, that was scary. Yes, Under Pope is seen End of the Apocalypse. I love it. Oh, sorry, I missed your question, Hockey. I'm attending a writing conference next week for the first time. Have you attended any, and do you have tips on how to get the most out of it? I assume you mean a virtual conference. I've never attended an actual writing conference. I've attended many, many, many sci-fi conventions, which have an awful lot similar in that there's a lot of panels about writing, and if you go to the right ones, you will have the opportunity to meet agents and or editors. Usually that meeting is at a bar and not like a one-on-one, but it'll be harder to find like someone to give your elevator pitch to or a one-page synopsis of your book at a sci-fi convention, but a lot of writing things have that. A lot of writing conferences have something like that. So yeah, tell me what exactly you're going for, and if not what you're going for, but what is it? Is it virtual? What are you looking to get out of it? And I will carry on with that. Back to horror. Okay, Kimmy says, I feel like there's an element of powerlessness in horror. Like, no matter what you do, death will come for you. Yeah, that's a good one. But there's also an element of powerlessness in humor. And so you've got to have something. You've got to figure out what makes something humorous and what makes something scary. Yeah. I really want to do, I need to do that episode on humor sometime soon. I think StoryGrid has some things about how to define it, like what element the story turns on. That's interesting. I may have to look back into that. I've not heard that. I know Connie Willis has explained tragedy and comedy in that it's basically the same plot. It's just what happens at the end. It's like, does everything get fixed and they get married? Shakespeare comedy. Or does everything not get fixed and people die? I mean, it's just the same build-up. It's just what happens at the end that makes it comedy or tragedy. Mixing horror and humor is hard. I feel like Christopher Moore does a good job of it. Christopher Moore does do a good job of it. Chuck Wendig does a good job of it. Depending on how you feel about the White Trash Zombie series, I think Diana Rowland does a good job of it. Not necessarily scary, but definitely got some gore in there, and there is a sense of powerlessness. Definitely. Powerlessness and humor. So K. Kimmy says, can you give me an example of powerlessness and humor? Sure. I would have to go get the book to specifically say what it is, but a, like, perfect comedy setup is you take somebody who's completely ill-equipped to deal with with what they're dealing with, and they don't give up. If they give up, it's depressing. For example, if you've read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Arthur Dent has been taken off the exploded Earth. He's in his dressing gown. He is very, very confused. He just wants a cup of tea. The planet below sends them sends two guided missiles toward the spaceship. And everybody around him is trying to deal with this while he's just trying to get a cup of tea. And, you know, he just keeps screwing up. But he never gives up. The example in the book that I read has to do with the movie Big, where the kid wakes up in a grown man's body and is like running around, and he tries to put on his pants and he doesn't stop. I mean, like, the pants will not go on. He's Tom Hanks, he's huge, but he won't stop. He just keeps trying to put those pants on, and then he falls over. If he like tried it once and then went, oh crap, that's not gonna work, that's not funny, that's kind of sad. So it's the powerlessness of being in a being completely out of your element, trying to deal with it, failing, and not quitting. So that's the basic element of one kind of humor. Daffy Duck and Wile E. Coyote also, yes, Whirling Nerdish, also powerlessness and humor. Oh, the Online Writing Excuses Surrey International Writing Conference. I didn't know they'd connected with another conference. That's cool. Masterclasses and workshops. I want to learn more about writing from professional writers, but not overload my brain with information and shut down. Making connections with other writers and maybe finding critique partners are secondary goals. Yes, all seat says all the jealousy for that opportunity. That's pretty cool. Anything Writing Excuses puts on is going to be worthwhile. So that's a really good move on your part. What they're doing with the connection with Surrey International, I don't know. So I don't know what that's going to do, but everything I've heard about the Writing Excuses retreats and cruises and everything, I haven't heard anything bad about it. Don't worry about being overloaded. I once learned that for the people who go to Clarion and Odyssey, these are both 6-week intensive residential writing workshops for science fiction. And I've heard what happens is you go and you're doing nothing but writing and talking to writers and talking to writers on your level and talking to pro writers and then decompressing and then focusing again, and you're writing one story a week, and it's so much. And some people go home after those 6 weeks and they don't write for 6 months. Sometimes they go home and they write and they don't feel like they've learned anything. You've got to trust your back brain. You've got to trust the fact that there's a part of you that's learning, even if you don't go home and say, I learned X, Y, and Z at this conference. You're going to be learning. And if you need a little bit of time to process, don't get frustrated. Just know that this is a thing that happens. And you know, I can't, my MFA was worth it. I can't like give you a list of what I learned, but I know that along the way, I became a better writer. Okay, Kimmy, I went on their first cruise. It was awesome. I think the best thing I got was the exposure to authors I wouldn't have checked out otherwise. Interesting. Sometimes you only learn when you're ready to learn. That's a good point, Cro-Mag. Good to see you. So yeah, one of the best things about these situations also is connecting with people who are on the same level as you. And you know, it's because you can meet people who are way above your level or way below your level and share a little bit in common and, you know, like each other and enjoy the company. But there's something about people who are right at your level that you can connect with that you can't otherwise. You know, I'm not terribly close with my Viable Paradise classmates, most of them, but the few I am in contact with, we're close because we've come along the same lines. But don't worry about being overloaded. Just get as much as you can out of it. Take notes, talk to people. Any chance you have to talk to people, take it. Mary Robinette Kowal and Howard Taylor are two of my favorite people. And you can learn amazing things from them. And they are, you know, some of the kindest people out there. So my Mary Robinette story is When I was nominated for my first Hugo, I knew I was going to lose. And I figured if anybody knew how to deal with the loss of a Hugo, it would be Mary Robinette. Not because she's lost a lot, but because she's gone. If you look at her blog, she's got like an entire blog series about how to become a pro author. Not become a better writer, but like, okay, so it's your first guest of honor point. It's your first guest of honor invitation. How do you deal with that? I wish I'd read that before my first guest of honor invitation. And, I can't remember the other ones. That's the one that sticks out. But she's got like this early writer blog series. It's just, she's so giving of information. And so I saw her running by and I just said, "Hey, Mary Robinette, I'm really nervous about losing the Hugo. I'm pretty sure I'm gonna lose it. How do I deal with it?" And she stopped and she said, "You don't have a Hugo now. If you don't win the Hugo, you will have lost nothing. Nothing will have changed. It's not like you have something to lose, you just have something to gain." And then she went on. And then, like, days later, I heard that she had food poisoning that day. And she was probably on her way to deal with that. And she stopped and talked to me about my very insecure need. So, like, I'd known her for years, and I always knew she was a nice person, but that's when I got like I saw the depth of what Mary Robinette will give to people who, that will ask nicely, I guess. But I really like the fact that Writing Excuses has done so much for beginning writers. So try to connect with people. I don't know how that's gonna work. I think the virtual places try to do it. They're trying to do the whole sort of recreate the casual social scene of conventions. But take advantage if you get a chance to talk to an agent or an editor to pitch your stuff. Even if you're not quite ready to pitch, get the feeling of what it's like to do it. You've got the opportunity, so you might as well see what it's like. And yeah, I guess that's it. Don't be afraid to be overwhelmed. Just know that you're absorbing, even if you don't think you are. You'll be absorbing stuff. And tell us how it went, because I really want to know. MRK is one of the sweetest people around. Yes, she is. I listened to Writing Excuses and then independently found Ditch Diggers. When I found out that you all know each other and were friends, it felt like the Avengers assembling. That's very sweet. Thank you. I always wondered how people got to become friends like that, but a lot of it has to do with being guests on each other's podcasts and seeing each other at science fiction conventions. I've met everybody from Writing Excuses except for Brandon Sanderson. I was guest of honor alongside Dan Wells at VCon 2013, 2014, somewhere around there. And then I've known Mary Robinette for a long time, and she's from Raleigh, North Carolina, which is just down the street from me. And Howard Taylor and I happen to, even though he's in Utah, we happen to go to a lot of the same conventions when there are conventions. So, that's how we know each other. She's on my Christmas list for books to get. So far, I've just read The Glamorous Histories. Yeah, she won the Hugo last year. No, yes, last year she won the Hugo, not this year. So yeah, that is how to deal with a convention. I should have been promoting this more, but I'm still having problems getting into the virtual convention mindset. I am guest of honor at Mile High Con in a week and a half, and actually about a week now. It's the I was very much looking forward to going to Denver and being, getting to see Rebecca Roanhorse and Cory Doctorow, but and Connie Willis, who is my idol, but pandemic. So it's going to be a virtual convention. The thing about the virtual conventions is you can go to in you can go. I mean, you have to sign up and pay, but you don't have to worry, can I get to Denver? You can go. Just go sign up. I don't know if they have a limit. I suppose, there is a limit as to they don't want thousands and thousands and thousands of people if they don't have rooms or whatever can accommodate that. But if you want to go to a virtual convention that I'm at and Cory Doctorow and Rebecca Roanhorse are at, Mile High Con is next weekend. Oh, Cro-Mag lives in Utah and made a few cons and conventions with a few of the Writing Excuses crew. Yeah, they're all great people. But yeah, if you get a chance and are interested, check it out. I don't want to be too negative. I mean, I haven't had bad experiences. I just haven't had awesome experiences at virtual conventions, but they're necessary. And I feel bad for the people who work hard to create an awesome in-person event and are forced to go virtual. But yeah, I'm hoping that it'll be a good time. But I am at my hour-long limit. Not that there's a limit, but I'm kind of out of stuff to say. If you guys have anything else you want to ask me, do so quickly. And otherwise, I will tell you that this podcast is streamed live on Twitch on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 12:30 Eastern Daylight Time. And then it's uploaded to YouTube and my personal podcast feed a couple of days later. You can find my podcast feed at merverse.com or search for I Should Be Writing anywhere, and you'll find it. It's been around for a long time, so it's should be in all the search algorithms, definitely. So, if you want to find out what I write, if you're new to me, then check out my books. I have a Star Wars book, I have a mini award nominated science fiction book, and I have a Minecraft book for middle grade readers and some urban fantasy. And that's what I've done so far. I've got more stuff coming up. Oh, and if you're a runner, I did a standalone science fiction race with Alistair Stewart called Rec Runner. So if you enjoy running to Zombies Run and you want a more science fiction type race instead of a zombie focused race, or in addition to a zombie focused race, check out Rec Runner. And that's all the shilling I'll do. If you want to find me, just search for Mer Lafferty or Mighty Mer. My name is unique enough to be easy to search for. Except I did find the other day that there is a video. I'm not going to watch it because it'll probably just really make me angry, but the title of it amused me so much, and that was Soilo novelist Mighty Mer gathers SJWs to attack people on behalf of Chuck Wendig. And I'm like, okay, first they called the book Soilo, Soylo. I did the novelization for the movie Solo, and my name's not Mighty Mer. That's my username. It's really easy to find my name. It's Mer Lafferty. I mean, it's super easy to find my name, especially if you look for on my book Solo. And I'm a good friend of Chuck's. I love him a lot, and I don't recall stirring up any SJWs to attack people on his behalf. So, that's a little tangent. It just really amused me. No, I didn't watch the video, but I there was so much wrong with that with that headline. It was ridiculous. The Adventures of Ham Solo and Chewbucky. Yes, that is the that's the fan fiction I will write for my own novel. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for coming and hanging out and being patient with me and my various Twitch changes. And thank you to the new followers and subscribers. And I also do game streaming just for fun Thursday nights and Sunday afternoons, but I'm considering changing that. Thanks for dropping by, Wordathon. Good to see you. So yeah, if you enjoy watching strange dating sims or Stardew Valley or Oxygen Not Included, that's usually what I play, but I may switch up that schedule. We'll see. Anyway, thank you guys. Take care, and I hope I see you next Tuesday, if nothing else, and in the meantime, you should be writing. Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymer. I should be writing the theme music provided by John Anilio. You can find more about him at johnanilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. It's on TV.